Okay, Mr. Campbell.
Thank you. May it please this honorable court, my name is Andy Campbell. I, along with Todd Campbell, represent the appellant, Brenda Morgan, who was a 24 to 25-year employee of Lawrence County, Alabama, in various positions, the last one which was the deputy director of EMA. Court is familiar, I'm sure, with the facts and the law in this case, Your Honor. I want to jump into it because it is factually intensive. I think the issue, obviously, this is a case involving retaliation, and the overall issue framed is whether the plaintiff appellant established a prima facie case of retaliation. Within that, the importance of...
Well, it goes beyond that, whether if you get past the prima facie case one way or the other, even assuming it away, did they assert non-retaliatory reasons about which there's no genuine issue of material fact?
Yes, sir. The district court did not reach that, Your Honor, but I'm happy to address that, obviously.
And well, I mean, we can, but I right. just wanted you to know the two bases on which you could lose.
I understand that, Your Honor. And I would point out that the first issue, sub-issue, and the important issue in this circuit, which I think is one of first impression, is whether if the contemplated discipline differs from the ultimate adverse action, do you lose the benefit of the standard of temporal proximity, which under the Cooper, Lighting, Gupta cases and other cases in this circuit have held that if you have very close temporal proximity of the alleged retaliatory act after the after the filing of, in this case, an EEOC claim, that has been held to be prima facie evidence. If it's extremely close, and here we have a matter of 5 to 11 days, temporal proximity.
I counted it as 39 days. Am I wrong about that?
Your Honor, let me explain. Number one, the filing of the EEOC claim was November 15th, 2013.
Right.
The ultimate elimination of the position was November 26th. That was 11 days afterwards.
But your timeline, why wouldn't you start on October the 22nd?
I do, Your Honor, because October, I'd like to actually start on October 30th. Because the basis of the district court...
Let's be generous and start on October 17th, where the chairman sends Morgan a letter to inform her she would remain on administrative leave under further notice. And
yes,
then the 22nd, they voted to reduce her salary, or the position salary, by $28,000. Mm-hmm. Then on October 30, he hand-delivered a letter to her informing her he intended to terminate her. And only thereafter did she file a complaint with the EEOC.
Yes, sir, but
looks to me like temporal proximity cuts the other way.
Well, actually, Your Honor, on November, according to the defendant's testimony, on November 11th, 4 days before she filed her EEOC complaint, basically the termination for cause was rescinded. Now, she did not receive it until 4 days after she filed her claim.
But they didn't say we're not going to take any action against her.
They did take action against her.
I know, was before she filed her claim.
No, sir.
I'm sorry, before she filed the EEOC letter, was it?
Well, it's disputed. According to the district court, he found that it was 4 days after because she received the letter reducing the termination for cause to suspension for 20 days without pay and...
Position that it was that the date was valid?
Excuse me?
Wasn't it your position below that the date was valid?
That
the four day earlier date was valid despite what the district court concluded?
Yes. That she basically filed on November 15th. She received, and it's document 37-3 for the court's benefit, a letter November 19th rescinding the termination for cause, giving her suspension for 20 days, and demoting her to deputy EMA director. Now, if you look at that document...
Right, but what I'm saying is you took the opposite position of the district court below.
No, I took the position that she received it on the 19th, and that was the operative date. The defendants argued it was beforehand. My position on appeal, Your Honor, is it really doesn't matter because that contemplated action of terminating her, which the district court based its opinion on partially, that basically was nullified by the commission. It was withdrawn. Ab initio.
What action of the commission when nullified it?
the action of the commission of on document 37-3, which was received by my client 4 days after she filed her EEOC complaint on November 15th. In that document, Your Honor, it says it's drafted November 11th. She received it November 19th, and the district court assumed the appropriate date was November 19th. So 4 days after she filed her complaint, it was withdrawn ab initio. It was rescinded. That was the word that was used.
But what else did the letter say?
It also demoted her to a deputy director, which had never been contemplated, demoting her to deputy director, and it put her on a 30-day suspension.
Which was less than termination.
Which is less than termination, Your Honor. But the point is, then, 7 days later, they terminate, or they, as part of an alleged reduction in force, they eliminate one position, and it's this position they have just demoted her to.
But hadn't they discussed doing that, I mean, months before? And hadn't she herself submitted that they only needed two employees? I recognize that she thought they would combine different responsibilities into the two employees, but didn't she herself recommend that they go from three to two employees?
No, Your Honor. If you look at her July 18th, 2013 letter, which is document 37-1, she does not recommend elimination. She simply says, for right now during this financial crisis, we can get by without a deputy director. She does not recommend the elimination of the position. The district court only found one basis in footnote 192 for the prior consideration of the elimination of the position. And that was the October 22nd minutes of the commission, which do not say that either. They simply, in those minutes, table the classification consideration for that position. Now, classification is talking about salaries. And the evidence is extremely, extremely garbled on this point, to be quite honest. For example, if the court looks at the chairman who sent the letter terminating her, Prentice Davis, document 38.2, his deposition at pages 106, 107, he says, as in November, they had not made a decision on terminating that, that no decision had been made until it was reduced on November 26. So my point is, under the authority of the cases we've cited, the Monford case from the Tenth Circuit and the others, the prior contemplated activity of elimination of that position is not there in the evidence. I invite the court to look at those minutes from October 22nd. All they simply say is the classification of deputy director is being tabled. And again, as the court found, this position was funded 65% by federal funds. And the evidence is disputed whether it was in the budget or not in the budget. Mr. Davis said it was still in the budget on the pages I said in November. It was still in the budget. So, and that's why the district court, I think, simply relied solely on the October 22nd minutes, which do not say that, in making a finding that the elimination of the position had previously been contemplated. The evidence is just not there. And that's why we are contending that Breeden and Drago do not apply, because you've got to have consistency of the prior contemplated action and what is ultimately done. In our situation here, I would urge the court to look at this. It clearly, there is evidence that could be reasonably inferred there was a manipulation of the adverse action.
You want to address a bizarre behavior?
A bizarre behavior?
Yes. Even if she files an EEOC complaint, seems to me like the commission had abundant grounds for not making your client the EMA, the Emergency Management Administration head. I mean, the behavior was bizarre.
Your Honor, I understand, and we have not appealed from the claims we made based on that, and I certainly...
No, I'm talking about, you say it's retaliation.
I'm talking about...
Even with temporal proximity, if the defendant comes in and says, okay, it may look bad chronologically, but let me tell you what the woman did. And yeah, if the evidence is overwhelming, largely undisputed, that the woman did what any rational agency would have been very concerned about and could have fired her for, much less demote her, then summary judgment seems valid to me.
Your Honor, the head of the county commission, either on November 11th or November 19th, either 4 days before or 4 days after she was fired, said, we are rescinding your termination. It's too harsh. Basically
they
demoted
didn't
her.
Terminate her.
Did not terminate her, demoted her. Demoted her to a direct...
Right, but they had good cause for doing that even after she filed the EEOC complaint and independent of it based on, I gather you're not disputing, bizarre behavior.
Your Honor, I'm not disputing the factual findings of the court, nor can I. I have not appealed from them, even though there was counter evidence. What my point is, the ultimate retaliation of eliminating her position and therefore doing away with the job.
So she should have been left as director?
No, sir. I'm saying she should have been left in the position of deputy director where she was demoted. And I understand they wouldn't promote her back at the end of the month.
No commission could have been concerned about having as a deputy director somebody who just goes in somebody else's house uninvited in the middle of the night and talks about seeing snakes all around.
Your Honor,
she's going to cut the head off of one of them. You think that's not a basis for demoting or terminating an employee?
Respectfully, Your Honor, the commission looked at that and said termination's not warranted. He said in
his... And they didn't terminate her.
But I'm saying after that, they got rid of her by eliminating the position, which is the ultimate retaliation. They basically...
If they had a basis for terminating her based on her bizarre behavior and not wanting anybody in that position who was inexplicably prone to bizarre behavior, it doesn't matter if they called it cat in the hat. If the action they took was justified based on her behavior, and that behavior is undisputed, I don't see how you can get past summary judgment on that.
Well, Your Honor, my point is simply this. Once she exercised her constitutional rights of filing an EEOC claim, according to the defendant's testimony, they had determined she was not going to be terminated. She would have a 30-day suspension without pay, and she'd be put back into the position of deputy director. Only after she filed her EEOC claim was this position eliminated 7 days after they put her in it. Now,
okay, we let you run over.
And I apologize, Your Honor, for doing that.
No need to apologize. We'll give you the full 4 minutes.
Thank you.
On reply, Ms. Kidd.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Jamie Kidd, and I represent the Lawrence County Commission. I'd like to jump into a couple of sort of factual, I guess, discrepancies with what was stated here and what was in the record. First of all, she was not demoted at the time when the letter went out to her November 15th, November 11th, as was noted by the district court. She had been removed from the position of acting EMA director back in October before any discipline was actually even previously contemplated, and Tammy Vinson had been put in that place. So well before we get to the EEOC charge, she's already been removed from her temporary acting position, put back to deputy director. Second of all, as Judge Rosenbaum pointed out, before the district court, the plaintiffs had rather vehemently argued that the November 11th date, which is what the evidence is, and I cannot explain why my clients didn't deliver the letter in a more timely fashion, except for, sometimes clients happen. But all the evidence shows that that was when the decision was actually made. Now, the other thing, though, is before the district court, the plaintiff had, Ms. Morgan had relied on the fact that the deputy director position had been eliminated prior to this happening, referred several times in their brief, document 32, and tried to use that as evidence of pretext on other claims. So prior to, coming up here to this appeal, they were absolutely arguing that the position had already been eliminated and that they knew it had been eliminated before and were trying to use that as evidence of sort of skullduggery as to some of the other claims. So that's an inherent contradiction. The other thing about this whole notion that somehow the termination was rescinded, that's simply not true. This is a case where due process actually work like it was supposed to, right? You have a boss, he proposes termination. That doesn't mean that it's final. It means it's been proposed. Come tell me your side of the story. In the letter, in his final letter to her, in which he, you know, tells her that she has been suspended, it specifically states the seriousness of these offenses does warrant termination. These are still Group 2 offenses. Now, he did consider her long service with the county, and also as to the portion of the proposed termination that was based off her behavior during the September 30th budget meeting as opposed to her behavior at the Hill residence a few days later, he also found that, you know, maybe there was some understandable friction between her and the former county administrator that had led her to act that way, and so downgraded a few of those offenses. However, he is very clear in that letter, this is not to say that this is justifiable. This is not to say that you shouldn't be fired for it. This is just to say, basically, I'm sort of cutting you a break. And that's what he did, ultimately.
What was the date of that?
That's in the November 11-15 letter, where he specifically states that, yes, these offenses are still worthy of termination, but I am, after having heard your side of the story and taken into account. So it's incorrect, as a matter of fact, to say that the termination had been nullified or appealed.
All right. Was there anything between October 30th, that's when he hand-delivered the letter saying you're going to be terminated, and November 15th that was communicated to her?
There was a hearing that was held on, I believe, November 5th. Was so November 30th.
Yeah, that was in front of Davis.
But, yes, Your Honor.
But did he announce a decision then? Did he say what he was going to do?
No, Your Honor, he did not.
I understood your opposing counsel here to say that something had occurred and the commission had rescinded, nullified its previous decision to terminate her before she filed the EEOC complaint.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's factually incorrect. There had been no decision made, actually. They were contemplating termination, but they, you know, this is a public entity. They have a handbook that lays out due process guidelines for their employees.
So they didn't tell her that you're not going to be terminated?
No, Your Honor.
They didn't vote not to terminate her?
No, Your Honor.
They didn't write down anywhere, we're not going to terminate her?
No, Your Honor. And as a matter of fact, if you look in her first EEOC charge, it actually specifically is based off, they're going to terminate me. I've been notified that I'm going to be terminated. I mean, when she filed the EEOC charge, that was what she did before the final decision had been made. That was the basis for it. You know, one other thing just to address, another issue that didn't come up previously in oral argument but has been an issue, is that there's been this very loose argument that somehow the commission didn't follow their own policies and that should be taken as evidence of retaliation. It's brought up in as one of the new grounds for evidence of retaliation. First of all, it's never been quite clearly discussed by the plaintiff what policies she claims that the commission actually didn't follow in regards to her. You know, second, to be frank, in the commission handbook has at the beginning a reservation of rights to deal with unique situations. And to be frank, this was a very unique situation. Nothing like this had ever happened before. There are no comparators that have been put forth because, honestly, none existed. This was a bizarre series of events. excuse me. The issue of whether or not, you know, that the commission struggled with exactly how to deal with it. I think, if anything, this particular case is almost evidence of no good deed goes unpunished. Because the thing is if the commission had simply hauled off and fired her before she ever filed the EEOC charge, we wouldn't be here. I mean, that's been absolutely agreed to in both kinds. So the idea that a governmental entity can then be, or any employer, can then be punished for trying to take its time and, okay, we're going to put you on administrative leave with pay while we investigate this because we don't know what's going on, right? I mean, they find out about this when Mrs. Hill's daughter comes and makes a complaint, her son, daughter-in-law, and then her son-in-law files a charge with the sheriff's office. So, okay, we're very disturbed by this. Then there's later some weird communications with about her phone being cut and all this kind of stuff. So put her on leave, have an investigation. After the investigation, it becomes clear to Prentice Davis that this is, you know, this is not any kind of, because of any kind of physical illness or disability or anything like that. And of course, there was an unappealed, regarded as disability claim underlying, but, you know, this is just extraordinarily poor judgment and handling of a situation by somebody who can't handle, obviously, can't handle the stress of being the sole person in the EMA office that's directly under in charge of EMA. And so that's when he gives her the notice to terminate her, pulls her in for a hearing, does not just conduct a pro forma hearing, listens to what she has to say, doesn't issue a decision that day, waits, decides on it later. Neither Clark County versus Breeden nor Drago versus Jen, nor any of the court's more recent unpublished opinions, including a very recent one, Tucker versus Florida Department of Transportation, that just came out February 2nd, 2017, require an employer to eventually carry out the literal exact same action, to have already basically decided on a course of action and carried that out.
Well, it would fit more retaliation claim if the action carried out had been harsher.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Than before. But any other points you'd like to make?
Not unless the panel has any other questions.
I don't believe we do. Mr. Campbell, 4 minutes.
Clarify. On the letter, which was drafted, and this is document 37-3, the letter that changed the termination of cause to suspension without pay, says on the face of it, it was drafted November 11th. That's 4 days before she filed the EEOC complaint, but it was not delivered till November 19th. And in that letter, the chairman of the county said, we're changing the termination from a termination of cause to suspension without pay for 20 days.
So they reduced the
yes,
adverse
reduced
action.
He reduced it.
After she filed the EEOC letter. Now, why is that retaliation?
Well, let me, if I may finish, Your Honor. Also in that letter, she was reassigned to the position of deputy EMA director.
But she was still employed.
She's still employed. But then 1 week later, they abolish the very position she's assigned to. That is the ultimate retaliatory act because, and you've heard counsel say that position was abolished on September 30th. Why, if that's true, and the evidence, as I pointed out to the depositions, don't support that, and the judge did not find that it was terminated on September 30th. If it was terminated on September 30th, how could she be reassigned to a non-existent position of November 26th?
Because they were trying to cut her a break. And as a result, they get sued.
Your Honor, I would contend that they were basically manipulating the way the adverse action avoid a retaliation claim. She was reassigned.
But let me ask you something. If they had done nothing, let's say, you know, the letter went out that said, look, we're sorry, but we're going to have to cut you loose because of this bizarre behavior. We'll have a hearing on it and we'll see. And then they had the hearing and they said, sorry, our decision stands. I mean, that wouldn't have been retaliation, right?
Your Honor, on
that. That had been retaliation?
Well, she appealed it on that basis. She filed an administrative appeal. And after administrative appeal, which is set forth in the manual, they basically said, we're going to reduce the termination. They were concerned about her filing a claim.
Right, but can you, and I understand you're going to make a point here, but let me just ask you the
yes
predecessor question, mm-hmm, which is if they had decided to continue with their original plan and terminated her employment after that hearing, how could that have been retaliation since all of that occurred before she ever filed the EEOC complaint?
Your Honor, that would not be retaliation in itself. You're correct, because that was October 30th. That was before. My simple point is, though, and the law is that the adverse action. In this case, ultimately, the elimination of her position had to follow what was contemplated.
I think you may have misunderstood the question, or maybe I did. It's not if they had fired her on October 30th. If they had followed through after she filed the EEOC complaint and fired her as they originally said they were going to do, would that be retaliation?
Your Honor, I don't believe so, because that would have been contemplated. But my point is simply what ultimately happened was not that. It was eliminating a position which had not been previously contemplated and had not occurred, because they had reassigned it to her a week earlier.
I understand. Okay, we'll take that case.
Thank you.
Under submission. Going to take a 10-minute break right now.
All right.